to phase out it of any other reason.
They have to pay the cost. So the decision is not to phase out as soon as possible. The decision is to phase out not later than 2010. And phasing out according to in an order called according to safety reasons and no other.
But there are people who believe that, for example, the Energy Council that's meeting right now in November might come up with a recommendation that they phase out earlier than 2010. And, isn't that possible?
Okay, yeah. But that's is
different.
A change
yeah.
of the course
right.
by
we'll
Chernobyl.
Get to that, yeah.
And that, I mean, according to the law which we have now, that means phasing out earlier than 2010. That means that the state has to pay for the utility. Some money, I don't know. Nobody knows how much money. But. The steam generators on Ringhals 2, they have been bad for many years. And it's quite clear that they could not go on operating the reactor many more years than nobody knows, but I suggest that they probably could go on for 10 more years, but with decreasing power, without changing the steam. So going on power generation until 1995 or something like that. But from economical and ecological points of view, it would be much better to rebuild the steam generators. And that is because then they could operate not only until 1995, but to 2010, probably, and at full power, and with a better working conditions. Without rebuilding, that means that we have to start up some sort of oil fire stations in Sweden. We have some in reserve, but they have no purification system at all. And running them they are only run for a couple of weeks, or perhaps 4, 5, 6 weeks a year. But running them for a whole year would spoil the environment. It's quite clear that rebuilding the Ringhals 2 would cost 1.2 billion British crowns, and but it would be paid off within a period of about 5 years. And it would also cause less sulfur dioxide and so on from oil fire stations. And therefore, there was a decision to rebuild it. There could not be a decision saying, according to the law we have now, that saying you have to, instead of rebuilding it, you have to stop Ringhals 2. Then you have to decide about the new law. But within the existing law, you could either permit the utility to run it as long as possible, that reduce power and so on, and that would probably be to 1995. Or rebuild it 89, is it? and then with some reduced power until then, and then full power. And the cost will be paid.
One of the things that's come out of my interviews with members of political parties in the last 2 weeks has been that obviously one of the things that has been discovered since Chernobyl, at Chernobyl, is that not only was Chernobyl a nuclear power plant for the generation of electricity, but that there were military purposes behind it too, and the production of plutonium. And I guess my question is, first of all, is that accurate? And secondly, this then raises the linkage between nuclear power and nuclear arms, which, for example, in the last 2 days I've heard people say to me that if Sweden can serve as a model for a society ridding itself of nuclear power, it ought to be proud that it can also serve as a society, once the link in Chernobyl has been made between nuclear power and nuclear arms, that it can also represent to the world the symbol of a society that says no to nuclear arms. Now, in my own writing, I've always distinguished between nuclear energy and nuclear arms, always. And I've never even used the term nuclear arms in writing about nuclear energy, because I've always drawn that line. Yet, people active in politics here, since Chernobyl, have it comes up in every interview, the reference to Chernobyl as both. Therefore, I still haven't asked my big question, which is the impact of Chernobyl on all this. We'll get to that. But
there was a link between nuclear power and nuclear arms in Sweden in the 1950s.
Right.
In the planning, it was quite clear that both politicians and the within the industry, they planned for dual purpose system. And that was the reason why they wanted heavy water reactors and natural uranium. But there was a decision in the Social Democratic Party around 1960 not to go on with the weapon part of it. And there was a formal decision in the parliament, what was it, 67, 68, 69, something, that Sweden would not build any nuclear weapons. And it's, for me, absolutely obvious that after that, there have been in Sweden no link whatsoever between arms and power. I would say that if we working within the utilities could see any sort of that link, there would be a very forceful reaction among people working.
You're aware that Chernobyl.
Yeah, I will come to that.
Yeah.
There's one feature in the Chernobyl reactor, which they also have in the Canadian reactors, and that is that it's possible to change fuel during full power operation. And that means that you can change fuel very often without influencing the economy very much. And to get weapon-grade plutonium, you should, in a large power reactor, you should irradiate the fuel only 1 month, or perhaps up to 2 months, and then take it out. And that's absolutely uneconomic in a light water reactor. But in a system where you can change fuel under full operation, it's quite clear that it's a possibility. So, and that we know, of course, and that is what the Russians have said in papers. It is possible, as it is in the Canadian reactors, but also the Canadians, as the Swedes, they have decided not to build any nuclear.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main thing, the political decision not to build one. Okay. Nobody in Sweden knows that they were using Chernobyl for production. Nobody knows. I'm absolutely convinced of that. But there was a possibility. There is one knowledge, and that is that the There have been a discussion between Russia and IAEA for 7 years for a control program by IAEA in Russian reactors of the same type as they have in many other, in almost all NPT countries. That is to a system where they can control that the no uranium or fuel is used for is only used for civil civil purpose and not for arms purpose. And the Russians they said the agency is free to make that sort of investigation in Chernobyl reactors. That was what they said a year or more before the Chernobyl accident. And that's one sign that they didn't intend to use them for military purposes. That's all I can say about it.
Okay. Well, no, it was a very useful explanation for me. So now Chernobyl happens, working chronologically here. As a representative and sitting in the chair of a perspective from industry, what do you see? I'm sure you thought about this. What do you see as the impact of Chernobyl, if any? Maybe I'm here on a wild goose chase, but do you see any impact of Chernobyl upon the decisions that will be made concerning energy policy in this country?
You know that now the committee is working with the problems, and they will publish the results during November. And that contains both safety aspects and economic aspects of the Swedish
and environmental aspects.
Yeah.
So.
It's quite clear that, so starting with the easiest part of it, that this industry hopes that there will be no change in the attitude. And my own feeling, and that's the only thing I can have, is that the government hopes to come through with the decision from 1998. Unchanged or almost unchanged, but that depends, of course, on the result of the investigation and on the opinion within the public and especially within the parties, especially the Social Democratic Party and the Liberal Party. These two parties are the main parties in. And we have seen a lot of signs during the summer that there are opinions mounting, especially in these two parties, saying that Barsebäck should be phased out or closed as soon as possible, this year or next year, as a symbol. A symbol showing that the Social Democratic Party really have started or wants to start the phasing out there are three organizations within the Social Democratic Party which in June said they wanted closing down of Barsebäck. That's the women's organization, the youth organization, and the Christian organization within the Social Democrats. And also, one of the organizations which took part in the Barsebäck march was the youth organization of the Social Democratic Party, which is very, very, I think that's an important sign.
Let me ask you,
But It would cost a lot of money.
To close Barcelona?
Yeah. Yeah. And, Barsebäck is operated not by the State Power Board, but by a private company with shareholders and with marks on the exchange, stock exchange. It's not possible according to the law we have now. I mean, they have a permission, written permission from the government, that they can run the reactor until breakfast of 2010. If not, safety reasons make it necessary to close it before that. So, according to the law, the state has to pay the utility, all the money. There must be a lot of calculation how much it will cost. No, I don't know, but it's a lot of money. That's one part of it. But the other part of it is that there will certainly be risks for power shortage in the south of Sweden if we close Barsebäck. If we close it now, there is such a risk already in coming winter. And then more risk next winter, of course, because the need of the power is still rising in that part of it. And we have old oil fire station in reserve, but running them 12 months a year, which would be necessary, means a lot of harm to the environment, local environment especially. And also that we have no reserves at all. If some power station of any sort something would happen, so it can't go on producing power. Or if we get an extreme cold winter, if we get a dry year with small amounts of hydropower. I mean, the reserve of hydropower in Sweden. You know that half of power is coming from hydro. And the total amount of hydropower which is possible to produce during a year can change plus minus 10% according to how much rain was there. And 10%, that's of hydropower is 6. Or 7 terawatt hours, which is as much as one of the biggest. Yeah, it's almost the same as Pacific One. Nobody knows what will happen in the political decision. It will come, say, March, April.
That's when I'll be back.
And nobody knows. I mean, it depends on very much on the opinions within the parties.
Let me get a response to you on this. My own view is that the Social Democrats, whose political fortunes are tenuous in terms of the last election, and clearly there is a very delicate balance. Politically, I think that if they do nothing, that is, don't close Barsebäck and just simply reaffirm, and then heaven forbid, God forbid, there were a nuclear accident in this country, their political fortunes, no, we're not talking about the human life, or would crumble, destroyed. That is, people would look and say, you did nothing, you had your chance, you did nothing. Whereas, if the new government now, under Ingvar Carlsson, in November, and obviously a former energy person, were to close or to take moves and make recommendations, and that this committee will do is under. I mean, I've heard it referred to as Brigitte Dahl's puppet. I'm not so sure if that's an exact characterization, but close enough. If the recommendations of the committee and perhaps the end of the government are that Borsavik be closed down and that the financial aspects be taken care of, and then a horrible thing like a nuclear accident would occur somewhere in Sweden, no one could look at the party and say, you did nothing and this happened. I mean, the party could say, we recognize this was a danger, we were taking the steps, and politically they would not be destroyed the way they would. I mean, that's just my view. I saw it in the United States, a Great Depression in 1932 can destroy an entire political party, the Republican Party, and bring in 30 years of democratic rule. It takes these single riveting events. And in many ways, I think politically, the Social Democrats might be best off for whatever motives, and political motives, as you know, are never the finest, might say that this is the one way we can cover ourselves both ways. Does that make sense to you at all? Or
Yes, of course. Yeah, I understand that sort of, and I know that sort of debate is going on within the party. But you also must remember that the Social Democratic Party now sits in the government, and they are also responsible for the industry production in Sweden and the power production.
That's right.
In Sweden. They have the political responsibility that everybody gets the electricity they want.
Well, that's,
if they don't get that, if you have to close down several industries, for instance, that's also a political risk. I think you should study a little bit the composition of the Swedish industry. We depend very much on the saw and paper, the paper industry, and their cost for energy is as big as their cost for labor. And they can produce competitive papers for the export because they have cheap electricity. And the export, the net export from the paper industry in Sweden is double as high as the from Volvo and Saab, from the car industry. And rising the electricity price to the double, which we probably need if we close many nuclear power stations, means the destruction of the paper industry. And most of the persons involved in papers are working in the north, where the unemployment is high. So that's also a political risk. You can't, and that's a problem with the nuclear debate which is going on in Sweden for the moment. We are only talking about the risk of nuclear power. We are not talking about all the other risks. The economic risk, the environment risk, or other types of environment. And that type of discussion is coming now.
Actually, I just wrote on the economic risk, so I'll tell you what I wrote, which is, I think, very germane. It was very interesting how Sweden was able to phase out its dependence upon petroleum. That was because the market considerations were not internal so much as external, and also the source of that. But to talk about phasing out of nuclear power, which really you cannot talk about the government and utilities except together, you talk to the Greens and you talk to other people and they say, well, we phased out petroleum when we had to in our dependence, we can just phase out nuclear power. And I've written on the market conditions which determine both, and obviously once you do that, you recognize that in one there is a dependence, that is the utilities and the government, and on the other, the market considerations were nowhere comparable. And I think it comes right to the heart of what you're trying to say.
There will be a detailed study of the economic consequences of phasing out Barsebäck or other plants earlier than 2010. And I think within the industry, and I guess also within the government, and Birgitta Dahl said that the last Wednesday, on television, that phasing out program until 2010, even that is a hard program from the economic and the ecological point of view. And to make that quicker can mean that we have to suffer both in money-wise and environmental-wise.
I have just two other questions for you. I've already taken up much of your time. How realistic do you think let's say 2010 comes, when it comes, how realistic are these alternatives for the replacement of nuclear energy? Obviously, when I ask people these, I hear conservation, solar, hydroelectric, do you believe that in 2010 these alternatives will be in place so that the energy needs of a country like Sweden can be met?
I think we have increased our power consumption 10% a year during the last 3 years. That won't go on. I think it will level out to about this level we have now, or increasing very, very slowly. It might be so that we can decrease it a little, but not very much, by conservation. Okay, you can build better refrigerators, but at the same time you build larger. And the result has up to now always been that you increase the power used in refrigerators in Sweden per capita. I think a lot will be done here, but that won't influence electricity consumption, so it will decrease. So, and I don't think it's possible to use wind power, solar power, instead of nuclear power. We have only more hydropower or coal fire stations. That's the only possibilities, and these are quite realistic. It would be possible for a much higher cost. We could build some more large hydropower stations cheaper without rising the price of electricity. But
that would be a very difficult political decision.
Yeah, and the rest of the cheap hydropower existing in Sweden, the free rivers which could be built for hydropower production, is not enough to take instead of these 12 nuclear power. So phasing out 2010 means some more small hydropower stations and much more coal power stations, and the price of electricity will be higher.
What is your position on, I shouldn't say what your position is, but again, before Chernobyl, one of the things I was very much interested in was the disposal of nuclear waste. And I read those newsletters, so some of the critics in this country, obviously the drilling, which led to a lot of protests, a lot of, I know it was only experimental, I know they were only drilling to find holes where they're just testing, yet it looks like these small communities, and I doubt you would be satisfied with someone, I guess, going in your backyard or and drilling, but what is the status of the plans for disposal of nuclear waste right now?
We want to make some more test drills in some sites, and so that we have altogether has something like 10 different sites very carefully investigated. And then we will want to make a decision around 1990 to go on much more detailed investigations in two or three of these sites. We have been stopped at one site outside Uppsala this year, but I think it will be possible to open test rigs on other sites not so heavily populated as Uppsala. It's quite clear the waste proper issue is still with us and in a political sense. But I must say that I think that the Swedish situation is much, much better in almost all other countries than before. And I think the waste issue is the smallest problem.
I thought so too, and that was why I was saving it towards the end. Although every time I raised it, critics there was this earthquake recently, the first time ever, I think, over there in Gutberg, is that correct? Which was one of the sites discussed, and this, of course, was immediately said that the uncertainty as to even where you can put the waste, and that it's of concern.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of debate still,
yeah.
And we still will have a lot of debate, I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
But the way we have handled it, as was written in a British report, that Sweden has chosen a Rolls-Royce waste model, while Great Britain had chosen a Mini model, or Mini Austin model. There have been a lot of critics within the industry that we have gone so far, but now I think from the political point of view that has been good.
Let me close just with a question on the safety overall, just to get a statement from you, which would be that I began our meeting today, I said that in my own studies, I had learned that at least I had perceived Sweden to be the model for the nuclear industry abroad. That is, if a country wanted to look at how to build reactors, they might as well look at Sweden, and the record is very good here. Do you share that characterization, and how safe? One can't say ever that something is totally safe, but the whole world really wants to know how safe nuclear reactors are. What can I tell people in the United States about the safety of the Swedish reactors?
Somebody has said, it's very difficult to select a world championship in nuclear safety. But I think the feeling within the Swedish nuclear industry, and what I've heard from people from the nuclear industry in the United States visiting us, is that there is a remarkable difference in performance between Swedish nuclear power stations and American, and also from that also means from the safety point. But I think there are in many other countries very good, and also I would say in the United States you have some sites which are really good, and also in some other countries, say Switzerland, Finland, France. I would say, if you want to make a selection of the four or five best countries.
Germany at all?
No, I will not include that directly.
Japan?
They are coming. They are changing in a good way, but I think now the list would include Finland, Switzerland, France and Sweden. Perhaps some other Canada.
And one is left with the, nothing else to say, but one is left with the contradiction that one of those top five and the championship is operating within a society that has asked it to commit suicide by the year 2010.
No, I think it's a shame. And I still hope that there will be a change. And, I mean, before Chernobyl, it was rising hope within the industry. No, that's nothing to hide. We hope that within, say, 5 years or something like that, that there would gradually be a change in the political attitude. And if everything performed very well, then in the end nobody would like to phase out very good nuclear power stations. And I mean, in the bottom, there is a trust within the industry that we can go on operating these reactors in a safe way longer than until 2010. That's a trust. We of course, we don't know. Everything can happen with them. So we might be forced to close down, but we don't know. But there is a trust and a hope. After Chernobyl, I don't know really. But in politics, everything is possible. I mean, the anti-nuclear movement, they have been they have said that the nuclear power industry, we have started a campaign to change the parliamentary decision from 1980, and that is very shameful, they said before, for Chernobyl. It was almost impossible to publicly talk about a change of that decision, or either going on after 2010 or building more than 12 reactors. That was a swearing in the
church.
Is swearing the right word? No, probably not. So you could not mention it, that you were thinking in those. Of course, we did it sometimes, and some of our industrial leaders, they did it. But every time, the next day there were statements from the anti-nuclear movement saying that it's a shame that you can think it. But after Chernobyl, there is now a large discussion in Sweden saying that now we have to change the parliamentary decision on 98 without a new
referendum
because of Chernobyl. I mean, the Communist Party and the Centre Party, they have decided that this is their party line. Before, they had know anything or what's coming out from this committee work. And before they know anything about the reason for the Chernobyl accident. And before they know anything about the safety of Swedish reactors after Chernobyl. So in fact, without having any facts, they now are saying it's quite natural that we should change the political decision for 98. And then, now it's everybody can talk about free about that.
It's called politics.
that is politics. Now it's shown that everything is possible.
I had a very interesting interview with the left party communists, and the representative who I spoke with, I forget his name right now, but he's on television all the time, actually, he's a secretary at, I've got it right here. And but he told me the position of the party is one reactor a year to be closed down, and it runs contrary the left party communist Kevin Kvist.
I know him, but
But basically, you know, that's the
he's not their spokesman on nuclear matters, but
right. But he explained that to me, but he took but. They're the only communist, it's a peculiarly Swedish communist party, because it's the only communist party I know of in all of my years of studies and writing and teaching and lecturing. Obviously, the strict Marxist interpretation would be that a society must fulfill its means of technology first, until there will be a crumbling of the order, and then from that, of course, you get your new order, and that's just page one, line one of Marx and Lenin ideology. Yet this is the only Communist Party I know of that is calling in the world, and I asked him this, in the world, that argues that one should limit technology by closing down these power plants. Communist ideology would argue that you let them go and go and go, and eventually you'll have four Chernobyls, and this will happen. And he said that, they receive international criticism for this, and it makes it very uncomfortable, but they are peculiarly Swedish in their orientation. And of course, the center. I think it's been a very difficult time with the assassination of Palma, and then Chernobyl. I think the sharp swords haven't come out yet, and I think this period of the summer, I think the South Africa question has been the first one now where Coulson has the honeymoon, so to speak, is now over. And I think the energy debate, November, December, it will take on the parameters of open political debate. And I think you're right. I think the center party, its future lies, I think, in they can't be blamed, though, for taking a new issue, since this was always their issue, but in trying to capitalize on Chernobyl politically.
Right.
And I had a very good 2 hours with Mr. Johansson of the party, which was a very, very, obviously, former energy person. So, and I think that everyone's just waiting very, very quietly, waiting until this November recommendations
and then
from
the
council.
Debate, the party debate would start.
Right.
Falsely.
Yes. Right. Exactly. And that will allow Mr. Coulson, whose style is so much different than Mr. Palmer's. Mr. Palmer, I think, in many ways, would have sought to capitalize on this politically the same way following the Harrisburg accident. That is, for all of his tremendous political attributes and popularity, it's hard for a foreigner to understand. In many ways, he was like John Kennedy in our country, somebody who had a very bare political consensus, very popular, yet politically had many enemies and had alienated quite a few people. And it was not nearly successful in his own country as the perception of it. And I think in many ways this would have been an opportunity where he already would have moved to capitalize on Chernobyl politically. I'm not sure, and we're talking half hypothetically, and the interview is over. I mean,
it's difficult to say.
It's difficult to say, but Mr. Coulson is very careful, very deliberate.
Right.
I think he wants to weigh both. Energy is one of his fortes, it is a strength of his, and I think he cares very deeply about society, and I think he realizes, too, that some of these crucial decisions he will make in the first year will spell his political and his party's political fortunes. It's difficult to...
But you must remember that Palme was a politician, and also in the energy field. He did not take any decision which harmed the utilities. I mean, this referendum was a political decision, a way to release the overpressure within the party at that year, 1979-98, and with the possible stability that the pressure will diminish for other reasons later on, and then we could change. I mean, it's quite clear that that sort of thoughts were in his mind.
Yeah, that's true, and of course that's right, line two did come out of a political compromise for the unions and the socialization of the industry, nationalization of it. Well, thank you, this has been very valuable to me, I really do.
It was very interesting to talk to you.
When I first started my interviews, I had all these questions, but now of course I've memorized them, so I never have to look at I never have to look at my notes anymore, but I'm going to make sure that I did ask you everything, and I'm sure
I'll give you a paper.
Oh, thank you. One of the things that I went out to CIFO, and they were up in Forsmark when you were there conducting a survey in general.
Yes.
And
right.
They stayed up there as a result of this, and then they've just published their results now. And it's obviously right now public opinion is very high. Particularly in Sweden, particularly amongst women and young people in particular. But everyone I met everywhere says, the only question here is how long it will take the Swedes to forget. That is the complacency issue and the issue that 6 months from now these may not be binding. Although one of the things I've noticed since I've been here is that the media seems to be waging a campaign. Vicious campaign against the nuclear industry,
right.
And if there's one thing a society now I see it in the States anywhere, freedom of the press is one thing, but when they take a position, the editorial writers every day start and the headlines every day, cancer deaths in Chernobyl, lapse. I think you could eat 50 radiated reindeer and not. Get cancer. We're talking about our different gradations. It's a very difficult thing. So tomorrow, I just had a new interview. I'm finally. He's not in my schedule, but I'm going to see somebody who I wanted to see because he's the leading editorial writer.
Douglas Neil.
So I'm going to see him, I believe, tomorrow. And
I think you should meet him.
Because I've met no one from the media. Well, Sven Anir, but he's more of a radio old Sven. And I think that it's good for me to meet him. And then I'm going to have the opportunity also to meet Hans Alvén, the Nobel Prize. Now, obviously, he's a critic, but it's hard to disregard.
Did you meet him here in Sweden in California?
I'm going to see him in California when I get back. He's not in Sweden now. Isn't that funny? I'm here and I called him and his office says, you have to see him when you go home. I think so. That's what they told me. And the only people I missed who I didn't see were, I was supposed to see Eva Moberg, who is not available. And then I guess up in Uppsala, there are some critics whose names are very familiar to you, but I had not known them, and I wanted to see them just for that input. Bjorn Gilberg, an environmentalist, who's very critical, obviously, and Arthur Tamplin, the American physicist.
He is working with
Gilberg. But Tamplin is interesting for me because, of course, his original research was in the atomic bomb, the development of the atomic bomb in the United States. I learned something very interesting just the other night from Gunnar Bengtsson that the radioactivity levels today from the fallout from Chernobyl are similar to the gifts from the Soviet Union, the United States in the 50s from the nuclear testing. They're very concerned, obviously, with how you explain this to the public and the credibility issue. And I'm striving for a balanced presentation, and that's why I'm trying to see as many people as I can get.
At the Coratom conference in Geneva, beginning of June, I gave talk about Sweden after Chernobyl, both environmental and politically. And I have rewritten it a little it's actual today, I would say. I think some of the answers I give you can find
that. Well, that would be great. Is there any truth to this charge? It's a technical question I didn't want to ask. Is it true that the food inspectorate, this is these questions came from Sven Anir, who told me that these are the, he typed these, I didn't type them. He just had these waiting for me and said, here, ask these the people you go to see at Karolinska Institute, but I had already gone to the Karolinska Institute. He said that the food inspector, it employs the figure of 80,000 becquerels as making up 1 millisievert, while the radiation people have suggested the answer should be 50,000 BCQs. Have you heard this at all?
I doubt that that is right.
And also, he says that in the government report, in the Karolinska Institute.
It depends on what sort of food you are talking about.
Yeah, I guess so.
It also depends on how much food you eat.
Right. I was staying out. I have several friends in Stockholm. I stayed at their home over the last weekend out in some island about 40 miles from here. Out in the, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful archipelagos out there. And we went out and we picked blueberries for an hour and raspberries, and then we went back and we had them for dessert. This was because I happen to believe it's safe to eat them here in Stockholm. But my friend told me that this was the first time in 15 years of having his home on the archipelago that he could remember this late in the season all these berries.
Was it north of Stockholm or south?
It was south of Stockholm.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he just said it's an example. He ate them all. I mean, and he's over in has a very good. Anyway, he works in the government, and he told me that it's just people are scared, and that's all it is. Fear, unfounded fear, and you know how many blueberries you'd have to eat?
But there are much more blueberries this year than there have been for 7 years. So that's.
You didn't tell me that, okay? But like that. But I do know if you go up to Uppsala.
I think Umeå. Right. Yeah.
If you go up to Umeå, where his daughter is a student, she's a last year of college at Umeå, and she was here for this weekend to meet us, and my wife is with me, and we're socializing for the weekend. She was saying up there that there's great concern, obviously, about the radiation and the fallout and what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat, and the fish. They used to fish all the time and eat it, and now they're just scared. They don't know if they should or they shouldn't.
No, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a gift of Chernobyl. So, thank you for this paper. I will read it, and I will send both of you copies of what I write.
Very good. Yeah, that would be very interesting to read.
Interview with Mr. Per Uncle, UNCKEL, from the Moderate Party, Wednesday, August 13th, 1986, Stockholm. With your office right here, because when I arrive, I have some friends in Stockholm, and we spent the first weekend 3 weeks ago at their home at one of the island archipelagos. I didn't want to leave without you all there. And they were going through my schedule with me, and when they saw where you and I were going to be meeting, I did not know at the time, mm-hmm. They explained exactly
what this organization
was. They are, well, they're Kai Blomqvist and some others who just...
Who you about us?
Well, I know from the States, from their own visits. Yeah, no, they're not politically active at all, but they are very attentive to Swedish politics. And they explained that this is exactly what is... Well, they use the word publishing house as well as think tank, so they were very close.
It's a conglomerate of all kinds of activities with the general objective to promote a market economy kind of thinking. That's the main purpose of the entire organization. And we work together with politicians, industrialists, and people from the academic circles. So our idea is to tie these three parts together in a fruitful theoretical discussion.
Yeah, so it is very much like American think tanks in that regard.
Yes, it is, and we have close personal connections with Heritage, American Enterprise.
I published a book with the American Enterprise Institute on the presidency about 6 years ago.
The problem is that they are lacking money. I don't.
They just fired their. They released Verity, I guess, their president or chief executive. I don't know exactly what they call him, and they're on a very slim budget. And it came as a shock to everybody. But the American Heritage Foundation is still doing all right.
Uh-huh.
We're already preparing for the post. It's interesting, the post-Reagan period is one in which a lot of these think tanks now are uncertain. who gets to be president next depends upon whether or not they survive.
Exactly.
Let me begin by...
Could I just explain? I am not today, just so you know, I'm not today responsible for energy questions within my party. My chief responsibility is nowadays education, science, research. I felt after 1982 election that I had been dealing with energy questions for 10 years, and I thought that I have to do something else.
Yeah.
And the former Conservative Minister of Education left Parliament after that election, and then I got her seat. So I changed over and started from the beginning again. I have kept my position within the board of the Swedish Nuclear Power Inspectorate to have at least one foot in the energy question still. But that's my background.
But still, yeah, I consider you, and most people who study this question consider you still to be one of the energy experts within the party.
I'm sort of, in this question, sort of a backbencher keeping an eye on those people dealing with it today.
Okay, good. When I come back, you can tell me who I should speak to on my next trip. But let me just ask you first, just initially, overall, do you see any effect of the Chernobyl nuclear accident on Swedish energy politics in the next 6 months, for example, specifically in the recommendations of this Energy Council, and then as the Social Democrats and the Liberals try to address this issue politically? That is, I'm thinking of Swedish public opinion, I'm speaking of the anti-nuclear movement in the country, the fears people might have. Do you think it's just going to have no effect, or do you think that, for example, the 2010 date might be pushed up forward in the sense of some recommendations, or will the Swedish people, as usual, simply forget and allow this to go? It's a lot of questions in one, but I'd like you to take it any way you want.
I wish I knew the answer.
Yeah, so I'll let you know next month when I write this.
Let me answer this way. In my opinion, what happened around 1980 after the Harrisburg accident, and then when the Social Democrats decided to turn 180 degrees and accept the idea of referendum, what happened around that time still has got importance today. The Social Democrats turned around and looked for a position which was suitable to keep the party together. One should always remember when one looks at the Social Democratic Party that the primary responsibility for the chairman of the party is to keep the party together. That's the strength of the Social Democratic Party, being a majority party or a major party in a pluralistic party system. So the number one priority is always to keep the party together. That was the reason why they accepted the referendum idea. Next step was, in order to make people believe sincerely in the idea of the Social Democrats actually wanting to phase out nuclear power, was to fix this 2010 date. One should remember that in the 1970s, the Social Democrats were the major enthusiasts for nuclear power in the 70s were the Social Democrats. So they had a considerable problem to get credibility for their new line. In my opinion, the year 2010 was fixed in order to increase their credibility as a phasing out party. But it was fixed in such a distance
in order to make it possible for the Social Democratic Party to change its position again. That is, that they needed the 30 years between 1980 and 2010 to turn the party around. It takes a hell of a lot of time to turn the Social Democratic Party around. What I think now is happening, and that's the major importance of all the Chernobyl accident, is that they are running out of time. We have obviously got a situation where the anti-nuclear feeling in the country was sliding down from 1980 until the up to the Chernobyl accident.